or if there are other car dealers that might be thinking about doing this in the future, I do think that this lawsuit's likely to deter them from doing that.
The Alaska Attorney General sues a group of car dealerships on allegations of false advertising. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, August 10th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, black cod threaten hatchery-bound chum salmon.
0.04% is horrific. It was abysmal. I mean, 2022, it just tanked to the worst that we'd ever seen.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
You know that eating fruits and vegetables supports good health, but did you also know that frozen and canned produce offers the same health benefits as fresh? It's true. Whether fresh, frozen, canned, or from the land, eating fruits and veggies can lead to a long and healthy life. So when it comes to getting the fruits and veggies you need to stay healthy, remember, every bite counts. This message sponsored by Snap.
Cooler and rainy weather over the past couple of days has slowed the growth of wildfires that have burned more than 250,000 acres over the past couple of weeks, mainly around the eastern interior.
The cool weather and the rain, it's really benefited us, but we're not out of the weather yet.
Sam Harrell is a spokesperson for the State Division of Forestry and Fire Protection.
We're still going to have high pressure lingering over the interior, and with that's going to come the warm, sunny days. We're still forecasting above normal temperatures.
But Harrell says firefighters made solid progress during the cool, rainy respite to cut more containment line around fires and douse them with dozens of loads from water scooping aircraft. That's helped keep the 42,000-acre Pogo Mine Road fire from encroaching toward the Trans-Alaska Pipeline and burning about 20 miles north of Delta Junction.
It's very close to the pipeline there, south of Shaw Creek.
He says the pipeline is engineered to withstand a wildfire. Harrell says two crews that were aboard a plane load of firefighters that flew in Tuesday from the lower 48 were sent to the fire. One of the crews on the plane was sent to the 14,000-acre McCoy Creek fire southeast of Fairbanks, where an evacuation order remains in effect along the lower Salcha River. Another crew was dispatched to the 51,000-acre Anderson complex, eight fires that are burning in an area southwest of Fairbanks between Healy and Nenana.
Multiple fires over there. There's evacuations in place by the Denali Borough and also along the unincorporated area of the Teklanika River.
The National Weather Service is forecasting more rainy and cool weather into the weekend, but Harrell says longer-term forecasts call for a return to the warmer-than-usual conditions that have set in over the past couple of weeks. A state lawsuit alleges a group of Alaska car dealerships advertised vehicles for sale that they did not actually have, and in some cases did not honor the advertised price for vehicles. The Department of Law says its filing Wednesday against Swickard dealerships in Anchorage and Palmer started with customer complaints to the state's Consumer Protection Unit in late 2022 and early 2023. Assistant Attorney General John Haley says undercover investigators confirmed the deceptive practices.
What happened here is not only were there those complaints, but then the undercover checks just kept revealing the same thing over and over again.
The state says posting the false advertisements was part of Swickard's business model to get potential customers to come into the dealership so salespeople could sell them a different vehicle at a higher price or a vehicle with expensive add-ons. Swickard disputed those claims in an emailed statement today, saying the company believed the customer complaints had been resolved. Swickard Marketing Director Carrie Myers wrote, quote, "There is clearly a misunderstanding between us and the Attorney General's office," end quote. Myers added that the company hoped to have a conversation with the Attorney General's office. The lawsuit seeks $25,000 per alleged violation, with the total number of violations to be determined in court. Haley, the Assistant Attorney General, says the point is not just to punish Swickard.
I think that if there are other car dealers that are doing this and we just haven't heard about it, or if there are other car dealers that might be thinking about doing this in the future, I do think that this lawsuit's likely to deter them from doing that. There are a lot of reasons why you wouldn't want to be sued by the Attorney General's office.
There are four Washington state-based Swickard companies named in the lawsuit doing business in Alaska, selling Buick, Chevrolet, Cadillac, GMC, Audi, Porsche, Volkswagen, and Mercedes-Benz vehicles. Black cod could be a growing problem for salmon hatcheries across the state. As KFSK's Thomas Copeland reports, climate change is warming the Gulf of Alaska and bolstering black cod populations.
Salmon hatcheries aren't for the faint-hearted. Ryan Schumann runs this hatchery in Cake for the Northern Southeast Regional Aquaculture Association, or ENSRA. Once enough chum swim up Gunnock Creek, Schumann seals their fate.
We'll close that gate and hit the winch button and force them into the building.
Next comes what Schumann calls the shocker.
Okay, so you electrocute them to stun them?
Yes, so females and males respectively. You can see one right next to the other there, and how he's got those gnarly teeth and she's just kind of got this cute little round head.
Finally, a bash on the head with a mini metal baseball bat, and it's lights out. The females slide down one chute and out come their bright orange eggs. Returns that day were okay, but across the whole season, they are not. The reason? Not enough four-year-olds. And most chums spawn when they're four. The goal was to collect 20 million eggs this season. They've ended up with less than half of that. And Schumann thinks he knows why. When the four-year-olds were released from here as fry back in 2020, they immediately came face to face with a mortal enemy, juvenile black cod.
The water surface just started frothing and popping with these juvenile black cod that seemingly came out of nowhere and just frothed the surface, eating these fish.
Those black cod, also called sable fish, were hungry over near Sitka too. Ben Adams is ENSRA's research manager. In 2020, he took a video during a dive underneath the rearing pens at Metavigi Hatchery on Baranoff Island.
We got in the water and it was just remarkably dark at first, was kind of the first thought that went into my head. So I'm starting to feel kind of disoriented and a little bit of vertigo. And finally, what I recognized that I was inside of this giant school of juvenile black cod where the fish were kind of swimming in a big vortex around me.
So Adams got a special permit to drag the pens 6 miles out and then release the chum. But was that enough to save the salmon from becoming black cod dinner? Well, now Adams isn't optimistic. You see, most chum returns to Metavigi come in later than in Cake, but you can predict how many four-year-olds will return by looking at how many three-year-olds came back the year before. And last year, the return rate was tiny, just 0.04%.
0.04% is horrific. It was abysmal. I mean, 2022, it just tanked to the worst that we'd ever seen.
Those fall returns are a late-season lifeline to fishermen, but this year, the fisheries around Metavigi will have to be limited. So, why were there so many black cod in 2020? Dana Hanselman is the director of Auk Bay Laboratories, a federal program which studies commercial fish species. He says sable fish spawn in deep water, and then the larvae need help getting out of there.
And so it's incumbent upon the circulation patterns to be able to transport those larvae into the nursery areas that are in bays and, you know, coastal areas. In warmer years, there's often increased circulation that moves them faster to shore.
Hanselman says that as water temperatures in the Gulf of Alaska have risen this past decade, so too have black cod numbers.
So every year class since 2014 has been at least twice average. And then some of them, like 2019, look to be at least five times bigger than average.
So 2019 into 20, there were five times as many black cod as there have been on average.
Exactly.
Plus, these fish are not picky eaters.
Sable fish are a voracious and opportunistic predator. And by opportunistic, I mean they'll eat anything. They'll eat it quickly.
Now, hatchery manager Schumann and Adams predict that next year's returns will be much better. But if water temperatures continue to rise, black cod could pose an increasing threat to salmon hatcheries and the fishermen who rely on them. Back in Cake, though, Schumann says that for the salmon, it's just another peril in an unforgiving life cycle.
That's a cruel old way to go, but I suppose they're going to die anyway, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. They're either going to be eaten by a bear or a seal or an eagle or...
Or gobbled up by more and more black cod. From Cake, I'm Thomas Copeland.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, humpback whales are moving into new territory, the Arctic.
Humpback whales are doing what they need to do to make a living. But for me, it really represents the loss of this incredibly special ecosystem that is the Arctic.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Quality childcare creates futures for families, children, and the state's economy. When children are safe, engaged, and learning, parents can work and everyone has a better outcome. Thread has resources to support your family in their childcare search. Knowing what to look for in a licensed facility is important for the safety of your children. Thread also offers parenting resources and support. To learn more about quality childcare in Alaska, visit threadalaska.org. This message sponsored by Thread.
A group of University of Alaska graduate student employees took a step to form the state's first student worker union on Wednesday. The Alaska Beacon reports that the Alaska Graduate Student Workers Association signed an agreement with the university system that defines who is eligible to vote on becoming a union, certifies them as a bargaining unit, and triggers a union election in the fall. The students want to see a vote as soon as possible, said Abigail Schiffmiller, an organizing committee member of the association and a PhD student in the biology department at the University of Alaska Southeast. The students have been working towards a union since last December when they petitioned to organize. The group's main goals are to secure better pay, health care, and working conditions for graduate workers. Schiffmiller said unionization is a crucial step towards achieving bargaining power over their own worker contracts. The agreement is that graduate student researchers, teachers, assistants, and fellows will be able to vote to unionize and later, were a union to form, to vote on union matters such as priorities, contracts, and potential strikes. Major changes could be coming to Juneau's waterfront. The city's Planning Commission has approved Huna Totem Corporation's application to build a culture and science center, retail space, and underground parking. KTOO's Katie Anastas has more.
Huna Totem is calling the $150 million project Auk Landing. It includes a new cruise ship dock, a culture and science center, retail space, and underground parking. Last month, the Planning Commission approved the dock, but they stopped short of permitting the rest of the project, saying they wanted more information and public input. On Tuesday, the commission got that public input, and it was mostly in favor. Kerry Crocker leads the local International Longshore and Warehouse Union. Their workers moor and unmoor ships at the docks downtown.
These are good-paying jobs. They're living wage jobs, provide pension, benefits, health care. And the additional work opportunity with this project is considerable for us.
The approved proposal includes a culture and science center, built with help from Sea Alaska Heritage Institute and Gold Belt. Carla Kasalukin, a Huna Totem shareholder, said Auk Landing would go beyond preserving culture.
It lays the foundation for economic empowerment and sustainable development, not just for the city of Juneau and its residents, but also within our Indigenous community.
Those who spoke against the project, like downtown resident Steve Krall, were concerned about pollution and other negative impacts of tourism.
The basic problem facing us now as citizens is not that tourism is wrong or bad, but there's too much of it, and we've neglected to manage it in a reasonable way.
But Fred Parody, Huna Totem's chief operating officer, said the project would help reduce congestion on South Franklin Street. It's on the other side of the waterfront from the rest of the cruise ship docks.
Shifting 125,000 people from one side of town to the other is significant in terms of pedestrian traffic flow.
Commissioner Eric Peterson said the location meant buses could avoid much of downtown on their way to the Mendenhall Glacier.
It lowers impacts to our community, especially with the buses not driving through town. And it basically provides a great way to unload a ship.
The commission voted to approve the conditional use permit application in a 7-1 vote. The Juneau Assembly still needs to approve a lease of the Tidelands before Huna Totem can build a dock. The Planning Commission's decision on the dock has been appealed by Juneau resident Carla Hart. The Assembly will either accept or reject that appeal at its next meeting. In Juneau, I'm Katie Anastas.
The University of Alaska and the state are hosting a 3-day International Drone Aircraft Conference in Anchorage this week. It'll showcase how uncrewed aircraft can respond to emergencies, haul freight, and gather scientific data. As KUAC's Robin reports, recent test flights have proven drones can replace traditional piloted planes.
On a sunny July day at Nenana's small airport, trainee pilot Brian Liu is prepping the Sea Hunter. a 300-pound twin-engine, 16-foot wingspan drone.
We're here in Nenana to do a practice run between Fairbanks and Nenana.
Liu is one of the newest pilots in the University of Alaska Fairbanks' drone research program, officially called the Alaska Center for Unmanned Aircraft System Integration, or AQUASI for short. It's designated as an FAA Center of Excellence to help develop the technology. Andrew Wentworth, the pilot in command for the tests, sits inside a white trailer set up as a flight control station.
We're working on our handoff from one control station to another control station in preparation to fly what we call a ferry flight from Fairbanks to Nenana.
Wentworth remotely starts the Sea Hunter engine and it taxis down the runway. Liu says the test flights comply with FAA regulations that require unmanned aircraft to remain in sight of the pilot.
Everything that we're doing right now for this practice run is visual line of sight. We will have all eyes, you know, when we're flying it, on it.
The pilots watch it turn around at the end of the runway and tell it to take off. Trainer Matt Westhoff watches the flight from the ground as the handoff occurs invisibly from a computer in one control station to the other in a blue trailer about 100 feet away. When the Sea Hunter lands, Westhoff says it's another AQUASI milestone.
That's the first time we've landed off of our portable station. We've done transfers and stuff before on the ground, but now this is the first time we've actually took control of it in the air and landed from that.
So what you saw today with Matt for the landing, incredibly uneventful.
And that's by design, according to John Robinson, AQUASI's new director of operations. Robinson says every AQUASI test flight has several safety layers, with human pilots standing by to take control of the aircraft.
A boring day with a UAV is an exciting thing, and honestly, we hope for a lot more boring days to come.
And they did it again. The successful handoff flights in July were followed by a test flight between Fairbanks and Nenana with control stations 40 miles apart.
There's a lot of things we're setting out to prove here with these flights.
Brian Liu says AQUASI's impact on interior Alaska is expanding.
You know, we want that to be the drone capital, and so we're going to start these corridors that need to be set up, and we need to establish this.
Yeah, I think the link is strong, and I would love to become the Silicon Valley of drones.
Robinson said this week's conference will focus on the potential for drone research and economic impacts. Topics include emergency management, artificial intelligence, law enforcement, rural community needs, and infrastructure. In Nenana, I'm Robin.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Princess Lodges, offering glass-domed railcar tours to Talkeetna and Denali National Park for Alaska summer adventures. Your journey begins at princesslodges.com. Whether this is your first try to quit or you've been down this path before, Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line can help you quit for good. Get help creating a plan that is right for you, no matter if you smoke cigarettes, vape, use smokeless tobacco, or ICMIC. With options like calling a coach, receiving text messages, and nicotine replacement therapy with patches or gum, you can quit your way at any time of day or night. Call Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line at 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit alaskaquitline.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line.
A recent study found that warming water and the loss of Arctic sea ice are allowing humpback whales to migrate into the Chukchi Sea. A group of researchers compiled data from scientists, local observers, and hunters. They found reports of more than 200 humpback whales spotted as far north as Point Barrow near Utqiagvik. The first recorded sighting was in 2007. Previously, humpbacks had only been seen in the Bering Sea. Kate Stafford, a marine mammal biologist and an author on the paper, says humpback whales are not the only newcomers to the Arctic.
I mean, I think it indicates that the ecosystem of the Pacific Arctic is changing. I mean, it's changing enough that it's got enough prey to support things like humpback whales and fin whales and certainly killer whales.
As human-caused climate change warms the Arctic, its ecosystem is rapidly transforming. Humpbacks are one example of a species that were previously found farther south but are expanding their habitats into the Arctic. Stafford still has a lot of questions about this new migration, like what the humpbacks are feeding on the Arctic and whether they may disrupt the ecosystem for existing residents like bowhead whales. She says long-term, the change is worrisome.
I do find it a little bit alarming. I mean, humpback whales are doing what they need to do to make a living. But for me, it really represents the loss of this incredibly special ecosystem that is the Arctic.
Stafford says to better understand why humpbacks are migrating, researchers will need more photographs of the whales being spotted up north to identify individual whales and track their movements. She says as long as the warming trend continues, humpbacks are in the Arctic to stay. The U.S. Forest Service says it will build 25 new recreation cabins in the Tongass and Chugach National Forests. The cabins won't all be built at once. The first 7 cabins are out for bid and will be constructed next summer. The first wave of new cabins will be spread across southeast Alaska and the Kenai Peninsula. They're all on the road system except for one, which is a rebuild of a cabin at the Annan Bear Observatory near Wrangell that was crushed by a tree during a storm over the winter. Dawn Collingsworth is Deputy Director of Recreation Lands and Minerals for the Alaska region. She says the Forest Service received over 1,000 comments on where the cabins should go.
Where we're siting these cabins is really where the public would like to see them, and because that just means they're going to get more use, which is the goal.
Collingsworth says the new cabin sites are more accessible than many of the existing ones, which are only reachable by boat or plane or extreme hikes.
What we wanted to make sure that we're doing is providing cabins that are more accessible and reach sort of a broader cross-section of the public who would like to recreate, but perhaps don't have the physical capabilities of taking a long hike up a mountain.
Congress appropriated the money for the cabins. Over $14 million for the years-long project is coming from the bipartisan infrastructure law passed in 2021. The Forest Service is also getting around $3.7 million from the National Forest Foundation for the cabins project. After building the first 7 cabins next summer, the agency plans to build 18 more over the coming summers. They don't know where all 18 will go, but they plan to have at least one in every district. That's 8 districts in the Tongass and 3 districts in the Chugach. Rachel Weston is the regional recreation planner for the Forest Service.
The cabins that were selected for this first round were the furthest along in the planning process, so they were kind of the most ready for construction. The remaining cabin locations are still being ground truthed to determine if it's viable to put a cabin in that spot, and the districts are still working through that.
Districts with higher public demand might get more than one cabin, depending on the viability of the locations. Forest Service cabins in Alaska rent for between $35 and $75 a night. The Aleutian Islands are having a cultural revival. Ununga culture camps and language revitalization programs have brought many young people in touch with parts of their culture, a culture that some feared was slipping away. This summer, 3 different communities worked to revitalize a kind of boat the Aleutians haven't seen since the 1800s. KUCB's Theo Greenlee reports.
Okay, people getting in the boat, can you come to the front?
It's Thursday afternoon in Sandpoint, and the harbor is packed. Dozens of people crowd the small dock. Others sit along a wall overlooking the water.
You'll get in right next to Michael when
they're watching a group of a dozen people board a long, wooden-framed boat. It's open like a canoe, but this is a nigala, a traditional Ununga boat made from a wooden frame and wrapped in animal skins. The community built this nigala in the spring, but they've been waiting on this launch for much longer than that. It's been 200 years in the making.
During the Russian fur trade, the Russians took notice of our ancestors' ability to move mass amounts, to move villages, to move their cargo, and ultimately escape the Russians during the Russian fur trade.
Amy Mack was one of the many people who helped build the nigala. She explains to the crowd that their ancestors used the boat like a cargo ship, able to move entire villages and warriors with one boat. And that worried the colonizers.
To ensure that our ancestors were completely at the disposal of the Russians, sadly, all the nigalas were destroyed.
But this summer, the nigala has returned. 3 communities have built them this year after studying historical documents, sketches, and artifacts to learn how they were made. Sally Swetsoff from Atka blesses the boat with holy water. Ethan Pettigrew takes the stern and instructs the dozen paddlers.
You ready?
Well, I'm going to count to three in Unangak, and you're going to then give a slight push. Those of you on the right side,
grab the front. Push.
All right. I need right side to reverse paddle. Left side, I want you to put your paddles out in feather position. Just hold.
They paddle out into the bay and make their way to a small island about a mile out. Pettigrew gives instructions. Sometimes they sing, sometimes they drum. And the boat approaches Range Island. They turn wide and circle the rocky mound. Today, there are only three Nigla in existence, this one in Sandpoint, one in Atka, and one in a town in Northern California, where many Unangak people were relocated during the Russian days. As the crew makes their way back to the dock, they're greeted by dancers. Pettigrew remains in the stern, and he is feeling it.
Oh my God, this is such a moving experience. You're gonna make me cry. People haven't done this since 1800s, and this is such a spiritual, moving moment that I feel so connected to my great-grandparents. I said walking with them, but I actually think I feel like I'm paddling with my great-grandparents, traveling from Nikolsky, Yemnak, over to Alaska or something. This was truly amazing.
Many people suggested names for the Nigla, but ultimately, Amy Mack says the choice was obvious.
Unangam Angi, which translates to Unangan spirit, we thought it was fitting. We chose that name because we are Unangan people, and Unangan spirit, we want that spirit of our ancestors and all that to come back.
After today's paddle, the Nigla will be hoisted onto the dock and stored at the tribal office. And communities in the Aleutians won't have to wait another 200 years for the next one. Already, a fourth Nigla is being built and will be water ready soon, this one in Unalaska. Reporting from Sand Point, I'm Theo Greenlee.
That is all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Tim Ellis in Delta Junction, Thomas Copeland in Cake, Katie Anastas in Juneau, Robin in Nenana, Kavitha George in Anchorage, Angela Denny in Petersburg, and Theo Greenlee in Sand Point. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alaska Air Cargo, serving the commerce and business needs of 20 Alaska communities, from Adak to Barrow to Ketchikan. More information at alaskacargo.com.
And by
the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.